Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's an FBI Friday on The Usual Suspects, and Barry's here, I'm here, Dell is here. Nick is not on the schedule today, so he is playing it safe from the home front. So hopefully the suspects are here, and we're ready to go for the next 3 hours. Fellas, what's going on?
What up? How goes it?
What's up, Joel?
All good in the neighborhood here. Sounds like from the fact that you were texting that you didn't have, I want to indicate texting, not tweeting, because I wouldn't have known. That you didn't have power last night for the storm that I told you was coming. So,
yeah. You okay. And little Uzi Vert, little Steven Uzik.
Yep.
He. I don't know. One of y'all was way off, and one of you was, I don't remember which. You were you the one that was telling me golf ball size hail?
Said there was the potential for golf ball size hail, yes.
You need to, I got none of that.
Well, I'm damn happy that you lost power, so there.
I'll tell you what, it didn't even rain all that hard, which is what really pisses me off about losing power, because it rained, right? And there's, I actually got a really cool picture I need to put on my Instagram, at Barry is funny, cheap plug, but I got a picture of lightning, and so it was like all around me going really bad, but it never really stormed here at the house all that much, it rained a little. But the power went out at like 6:15 and didn't come back on until 7:30, well, I normally go live with these live chats that I've been doing at 7 o'clock every night. So, of course, now I'm stuck again and can't get – and people had been starting to – hey, they tune in right at 7. And, you know, 2 days ago when Lance was late and we had schedule issues, everyone was like, where is it? So, it's just making – it made it really difficult 2 nights in a row to start on time. And yeah, just for no reason. And then CenterPoint – so CenterPoint, I don't get – I don't have good signal at my house for it's like cell signal. Mm-hmm. Our neighborhood, for whatever reason, doesn't have good cell signal. So I have to walk around and go outside and go to the mailbox and go for a drive. And I get a text from CenterPoint that says, we know your lights are out. They should be on by 7:45. I was like, oh, my God, it's 6:15. So then I get another text. The lights come on at 7:30, at which point I get another text from CenterPoint that says, hey, we realize there's a problem. Your lights won't be on until 8:50. I'm like, my lights are on, you weirdos.
Well, who was scheduled to be on the show?
Billy D. Washington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we started late, but we got it in. It was a good time. We had fun. But, yeah, it's just like I don't know. If I fart really hard over here or really loud, the lights go out. It's a CenterPoint is like – it's like a deadbeat dad. Like, they don't even care about leaving the lights on for you. They just – they don't care. They're like –
well, whatever. It's like – well, that sounds like a natural clapper. I mean, just fart on. Fart off,
yeah.
And then you know, just turn the lights on and off, and you know, and crap works for you.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. CenterPoint's pretty awful at whatever. I don't know what equipment they have or what, but it's pretty terrible. If it's a slight wind or a drizzle, lights go out. Period. This whole neighborhood, this whole area. There, and then they tell us, oh well, we have old equipment. Well, what am I paying you for? Well, I mean, I don't pay you. I pay another light company, but still, you get money somehow. You're not working for free? Fix it. CenterPoint?
Well,
I'm done.
Grown people problems. At least it's fixed.
Yeah that's
you true. Have power
everything
today.
Else going on. It could have been worse. I just sat at the table, ate sandwiches, and played spades on my phone. So,
well, and then lo and behold, late into the night last night, Billy O was at it again.
I don't know why the Texans should even worry about the draft coming up now since they have no picks. He's traded away another one. He got himself a receiver that we laughed a couple weeks ago about receivers that had been traded for a number one pick at least one time. And we said, well, there was one guy that had been traded twice for a number one pick, Brandon Cooks. No way he gets traded for another. Nope, but he's going to the Texans as Billy O is trying to salvage something. I don't know what, but they got themselves another receiver last night for a second-round pick. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are you basically paid what Arizona paid for D-Hop, for Cooks. Yep. It makes no sense. I did a quick little breakdown of the numbers here. And basically, you got two for the price of one. For what you would have got for D-Hop, we'll talk salary in a minute. Let's just talk production on the field. Between Cobb and Cooks in 2018, they had 118 catches. D-Hop had 115. They had 1,587 yards. D-Hop had 1,572. They had seven touchdowns. That's combined, Cobb and Cooks. D-Hop had 11. So equal production, two against one. In 2019, not even close. Joe, you good? Bro, you're breathing.
Oh, my God. Here we go again.
The reception, it's allowed. The receptions, 97 for Cobb and Cooks. D-Hop had 104. 1,400 yards for Cobb and Cooks. D-Hop had 1,165. Five touchdowns to D-Hop, seven. Dude, you literally gave away D-Hop for two guys to equal his production. And the sad thing is that what they're going to pay both of Cobb and Brandon Cooks over the next 2 years, they could have paid D-Hop because they're going to get $19.5 million. He wanted $20. Where does this
But take it even a step further, though, because essentially you traded D-Hop for Brandon Cooks because the way the trade works, you know, you just used the second-round pick that you got in the deal, and I just –
Well, you traded him for
again,
that and David Johnson. So you got to
okay,
got
great.
David Johnson.
Yeah, because there's a ton of value staring you in the face as it looks right now with David Johnson. I mean, look, everybody's talking about it all over the country again, and the Texans have more egg on their face. I keep thinking James Dolan. I keep thinking, is there a worse situation in sports where you have ownership that at least from Cal McNair's perspective, he's not out there like flaunting everything that he says and does, like a lot of these owners that, you know, have never been athletic in their lives or famous and they want the attention on them. But screw it up more. James Dolan, at least Daniel Snyder tries to win. He overpays for free agents and does things like that, but he's trying to win and he hires a general manager and a head coach. And they, you know, for the most part, try and do something positive to help this team. I keep watching this going, Bill O'Brien gets more and more power by the day. Cal McNair says nothing. And I don't know that there's a worse ownership group in all of professional sports. And I know how Knicks fans feel now because just sitting back every day having to watch just another debacle after another debacle is just amazing. I mean, Andrew Brandt tweeted this morning, in the past 9 months, the Texans have paid Clowney $7 million to play for the Seahawks, traded two first-round picks for Tunsil with no companion contract to get that extension done, traded for bloated contracts like David Johnson and Brandon Cooks from teams that were desperate to offload. Opposing GMs smell blood in the water. They have to. They have to look at this guy like Daryl Morey looks at the Sacramento Kings and goes, bingo!
I don't know that they're – I wouldn't necessarily say they're the worst ownership group, but they are really trying hard to claim that. At this point, I do think there are a few teams in the NFL and in other sports that are pretty terrible at what they do. But I tell you what, the Texans are making a really good push to claim that crown. And at least – I mean, they're in the conversation. Don't get me wrong. They're a top five worst-run organization currently amongst any of the big three for sure. Just because of the moves that they're making. And it's just every one of them is head scratching. And I don't understand why you think that it would be okay to pay for Brandon Cooks what someone else paid for DeAndre Hopkins. I don't understand how that's a basic rationale that you look at it and go. And then you saw Lance's tweet where he said that teams were saying you could have got Cooks for a fifth round pick.
I didn't see that, but
yeah,
that makes
you even
feel worse.
He's talking to NFL teams, not speculation, not reporters. He talked to NFL teams that said Cooks could have been had for a fifth-round pick. why is Bill O'Brien overpaying for players that he goes and gets and then accepting pennies on the dollar for players that he doesn't want anymore?
It makes well, and here's no what sense. I keep going back to.
This is how
to.
You run a football team. This is the
That's
blueprint
what I'm saying. Here's
for
what
running
I keep
a football
going
team.
Back to. Even if you fire him now, the cupboard is so bare, no one's going to want to take the job because, one, they don't have any draft picks, and, two, that the future is bleak because of the fact that you've got all these contracts you still have to get done, like Tunsil, like Watson. You don't have any draft picks. How are you going to get better? And all the moves that Bill O'Brien has made is basically like said, I'm going for it while I'm still here, and if I go – yep, so be it. But guess what? Whoever takes the job, y'all are screwed. I just, it's, if I'm a Texans fan, I just don't know how you can continue to be one. We keep talking about that, but with every passing day and every move made, everyone in the nation sees what we've seen for already a couple years. And the thing that pains me even more, and Dell, I don't know if we have the audio yet or not, but Booger McFarland this morning actually gave Bill O'Brien more credit than I would ever give him. He said he's got to go and he's got to get fired because he's terrible as a general manager. However, he's a good football coach. Where? How? Maybe at Penn State when he had to resurrect them. Maybe in college football. But in terms of being a pro head coach, aside from winning a bad division for several years and then bowing out in the playoffs quickly, how does that make him a good football coach?
Are we doing the audio? No.
Dell, do you have that audio? Yeah. Okay, here it is.
I think the biggest thing with Bill O'Brien is from a team building standpoint, when you're a general manager, your job is to build a team. Regardless of relationships, you need to build an offense, a defense, get players that can be impact players on both sides of the football. And I think Bill O'Brien, he struggles with that because you don't trade away impact players like Clowney and Hopkins and think, okay, I got draft picks, I got cap space. He told us with the DeAndre Hopkins situation, Hopkins wanted more money. So let me get this straight. Hopkins, who's a better player, wanted more money. You trade him away, get a lesser player with concussion injury history with a worse contract in Brandon Cooks. It's not making sense. And I think that's the reason why the entire football world doesn't understand how Bill O'Brien, the GM, is team building, because he's doing a terrible job as a GM. He's an above average coach. You don't make the postseason as many times as he has by not being an above average coach. But as a GM, let's be honest, he's terrible.
I'm going to agree with him, and I don't do that often, but I've made the case on this show in the past for why Bill O'Brien was a good head coach. And I pointed out several things that you could look at and say, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Now, then you get to Kansas City Chiefs, you know, the 24-point leads and all that stuff, and you go, oh, but he didn't say he was a good head coach. He didn't say he was a great head coach. He said he was above average, and I would tend to agree with that. He makes a lot of dumb mistakes on the field. But at the same time, you have to give him credit for the wins that, and the wins that he's put up and the winning seasons that he's had. Now, he's obviously awful, an awful.
But Barry,
team. What
we talk about, how many different things that a head coach has to have a grasp on that he doesn't, from time management to the timeouts used, to the challenge flags, to, you know, fake punts called, and all those other things. I mean, product of circumstance. The division just wasn't very good a lot of times when he ended up winning. Sure, he won, but I don't think that makes him above average or good.
No, it makes him above average because, listen, you and I both thought that that was a 6-10 team at best going into the season last
True.
Year. And they played really well. And there was times and during the season, I'm just wanting to be honest, because we've always said that, you know, we call it like we see it, and we don't just want to hop on the bandwagon of crapping on Bill O'Brien. There were moments in that season where we were singing his praises because he had opened up the offense. He got creative. They were rolling. They looked good. They were doing the right things. Yeah, every once in a while he should have thrown a challenge flag or called a timeout, but that's why he's not considered to me to be a good coach. But he is above average because he does things at times on the field that you were like, okay, I see it. That's not bad. But then he does, you know, then he collapses in the playoffs and it's back to – but that's, again, that's why he'll never be considered good.
Dell?
I don't think what he said was too far off.
Dell, good coach? Above average?
He's above average. He's not bad. He's not good. He's not good. Because good means you have a handle on the things he doesn't have a handle on. You know when to call timeouts. You know when to challenge. He doesn't have to be great, because great means you're a mastermind at things. You're like an Andy Reid type. Bill O'Brien is an above-average coach because his record tells us he's an above-average coach. But he's not a good head coach.
It's funny, Dale, you said that, because I think that that happens a lot, where you said he's not a mastermind like an Andy Reid. You realize Andy Reid was a punching bag until he won the Super Bowl because of getting to the playoffs and collapsing and failing and not and always coming up short. It wasn't until this year where everyone was like, finally. And people were really
– Yeah, but he wasn't a punching bag because of the fact that they knew he was an offensive, quote-unquote, genius. People loved the fact that
so
he could
Bill
coach
O'Brien.
Offense. Get out of here, man. I mean, you want to talk about night and day. There's Andy Reid's offense and there's Bill O'Brien's. I mean, you know, from my standpoint. And the other thing was, Barry, to your point, everybody was pulling for Andy Reid because he's a good dude and he talks to the media and he's easy to get along with, as opposed to this arrogant guy on Kirby who thinks that he hung the moon and hasn't won a damn thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, on the field, I think he's an above average football coach, but I think he is a terrible GM. And I still, even being an above average football coach, I still think it was his time was up and he needed to go before he became the GM of this team. So it doesn't change anything, but this is another in a long list of head scratching moves that you have to, at some point, I don't know what else to do other than you're going to have Kyle McNair fire him. I don't know. Or just step down and get a real GM. Maybe don't fire him if Cal likes him to keep him around for as a coach. But this GM stuff has got to stop.
But here's the other thing. With his ego, he's not going to allow Cal to bring in a general manager that he doesn't get to hand pick. And even when he gets to hand pick him, he's not going to get along with him. Just look at Brian Gain.
Yeah, that's a fact. I mean, that's a fact. His ego is the problem.
Golly. Well, let us know what you think. We've got plenty of show to get to. And the lines are open, 713-780-3776, HR&P listener line. Call that number or text that number. And then if you want to really participate throughout the show and otherwise, unless you're me and Barry communicating with one another, you can tweet us at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, as we continue to roll on. Dell has hour number one. I think Aaron Raybould has the second 2 hours of the usual suspects. Back with a whole lot more, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5 is your home for sports talk. And now we're more talk with less commercials.
Are you serious?
Oh, it's true.
It's damn true.
Houston's only FM sports station. ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sharara.
Parents. Parents give me more trouble than the kids. Making me call parents to see why the kids ain't active online. Parents need to be calling me to tell me why the kids ain't active online. At a virtual parent conference, they had the kid lie to me and say the mama wasn't there. I'm like the same mama I see hiding behind the wash and dry back there. I play stupid for my sanity. Man gonna tell me his son can't do work for 3 days because he's suspended. How he get suspended from home? He told me he got put out. I ain't trying to get in nobody's business. At first it was a hunch. Now I'm thoroughly convinced that these parents either can't or don't read. Funny how you can't understand instructions, but you can execute the hell out of a TikTok video. Parents lying, tell me we ain't contact them. They don't know that we can see that they open our message on Class Dojo. I'm tired of explaining the same thing I just explained by 30 times. I used to get mad at the kids for doing that. Now I just see that they got it honest. I used to complain about not being able to get a hold of parents. Now I could care less. Can't nobody save them but God.
Eddie B is our comedian of the week on an F Yeah Friday. F for funny. Barry normally at this portion of the program gives you a little backstory on our comedian of the week. So without further ado, Barry.
Yeah, dude. At comedian Eddie B on Twitter. Eddie B is a bit of an anomaly in the Houston comedy scene because Eddie was kind of going along under the radar, not getting a lot of respect, not getting a lot of due. And then, like so often can happen on the internet, you make one video and it goes viral, and the next thing you know, you're blowing up. And that's exactly what happened with Eddie B. He made a video talking about being a teacher and the trials and tribulations of being a teacher. He said he posted it. He went to bed. He woke up the next morning. It had 1 million views. It had been shared all over the country. People were messaging him saying, oh my God, I feel the same way. You're hilarious. That dude sold out the Smart Financial Center not too long ago here in Houston. That's an amazing accomplishment for somebody that didn't have, you know, any management or accolades or anything like that. It's just he went viral and his career took off, and now he tours. He does sold out shows for teachers all over the country, and he's a funny dude, man. And if you have kids, you can still relate to what he's talking about because you know that relationship with teachers. So,
got it. So Eddie B is our comedian of the week. Yep. Got two more clips coming up, 2:15, 3:15. So stay tuned for those as well. And you can follow him at Comedian Eddie B on Twitter. So there's our comedian of the week. I wanted to get back to this because of the fact that we were talking the Texans. And it's just, obviously, it's extremely frustrating. But, you know, we talk about what David Johnson's going to be paid and the whole debacle within the debacle of that move. Brandon Cooks was making good money. And so as part of the article that ESPN put out there today, they gave the Texans another failing grade for this trade. I think it was a D+. So it wasn't completely failing, but it was really awful. And one of the points that they made in the deal was, even with the Rams bearing the initial brunt of the Cooks deal, Texans are paying him meaningful money. They owe him $47 million over the next four seasons. Eight of that is guaranteed. But the Texans are realistically making this trade expecting to pay Cooks $20 million over the next two seasons. You're going to pay Randall Cobb $9 million a year over the next two seasons. So essentially, in the next 2 years, those two receivers are going to cost you $47 million.
Mm-hmm. The number I saw was that they're going to average between Cobb and Cooks over the next 2 years, they're going to average $19.4 million. And D-Hop wanted somewhere between 18 and 20.
Yep. And then you go back to what you said about comparing the statistics, and one guy's numbers were as good as the other two's. And then when you look at all
the
injury
issues. And one guy
was
on the field the whole time.
Yeah, I was going to say, the injury issues again. Now, I've seen Randall Cobb when he's good, but guess what? He's only good for a couple games a year before he gets hurt. Then we talk about the fact that Cooks has had like five concussions over the last 6 years. I mean, and recently he's had three, I think, in the last 2 years. So that's a really big concern. He had one in the Super Bowl. And it took him out of the game in the first quarter, I think. So he's seen a specialist in the offseason. He's trying to get literally his head on straight and head right. But you don't know. So there's more question marks than there is answers for the second straight deal that Bill O'Brien has made this offseason. And that's what I think really, really gets people to their boiling point and to the brink as being a Texans fan.
You know, I want to just be a voice of reason for a moment. Because I'm furious with the trade, and I think Texans fans should be furious with the trade. I think, in general, the D-Hop stuff is going to leave a sour note, a sour taste in the fans' mouth for a very long time, as it should. But here's the thing. There is a small part of all this where if you step back and look at this team as currently constructed, you can't go back and fix anything with D-Hop. But if, and this is a big if, Joel, but if every offensive position that's the sexy positions, tight end, wide receiver, running back, and quarterback, if everyone is healthy and plays up to their ability, this is going to be a nasty offense. But the likelihood of that happening is about 3 to 10%. So, I mean, somewhere now, less than 10%, I should say.
I go to the line that I always go to with you in these what-if situations. If my aunt had outdoor plumbing, it'd be my uncle. I mean, I think that that's not going to happen, and I don't think that this is going to happen. I understand what you're saying, but then what you're saying essentially is we're getting David Johnson of what, 2016?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. You get David Johnson from 2016. You get the Brandon Cooks prior to last season. You get Randall Cobb in his Packer heyday. You get, you know what I mean? You get your tight ends are back and catching touchdown passes like they did last year with Fells. You get Duke Johnson out of the backfield on third down, looking like Darren Sproles on some plays. You know what I mean? You get all of these guys. You get Deshaun Watson creating on the run and making defenses look silly with his. But you get all of that combined. You got Cooks Fuller. You got
Kenny
Cooks
Still,
and Fuller.
Oh,
no, you
Stills
got Cooks and Fuller.
Fuller
on the outside running go routes and Stills and Cobb, you know, in the middle running a post and a cross. It's unguardable if all four of those guys are on the field with David Johnson. You know what I mean? Like, if you think about that, if they go to a 1-0 personnel where they've got four wide receivers, all four of their guys on the field at the same time, and David Johnson in the backfield. And Deshaun Watson running that play. If all those guys are healthy and playing great, that's a pretty unstoppable offense.
But then you've got people out there that are saying because of their money situation that they will consider cutting Stills. Why would you do that? Yeah. You need him to make up the receiving core that you're talking about, for one. For two, he had a lot of big receptions and plays for you last year when you couldn't rely on Will Fuller's health and so many other receivers not named DeAndre Hopkins. So you wouldn't do that for that reason either. And because he's in the last year of his deal, you know, you have time to do what you need to do. But you need him more than ever because he's a guy that's versatile enough to play the outside, the slot. He can be moved around. But he makes plays. He's come up big for you. It would be so Texan and Bill O'Brien to say, yep, we got this receiving core, but we need money, so we're going to cut Kenny Stills.
Totally agree. And I just wanted to point out that this offense does have a ton of potential, but there's less than a 10% chance of it actually coming to fruition. But so back to reality, I totally agree with you on the Kenny Stills thing, because here's the problem with cutting Kenny Stills. The reason you have these four receivers is because none of them have proven in the last season and a half that they can stay on the field consistently. So you need all of them on the roster as insurance for the other guys. So you have to have a Kenny Stills, but you need a Will Fuller if Stills is hurt, but you need a Randall Cobb if Will Fuller is hurt, but you need a Brandon Cooks if Cobb and Fuller and Stills. So you need all four of these guys on the roster at the same time, because you're probably only going to have three of them at best at any one moment in the season. And you know what's crazy is, you had insurance. You had a guy that was on the field every time, and that's who you traded away for this mash unit of potential. And that's really the best way you can summarize this D-Hop thing, is you traded away consistent greatness for a mash unit of potential. That's where we're at.
And again, I go back to, for you talked to mediocre to above average general managers. And when with blessed with this scenario to see how they would react, at any given time, basically regardless of the position, but especially in skill positions like receiver, quarterback, those types of positions, if you're a general manager and they ask you, hey, we're going to give you on your roster a top three player. However, you got to pay him like a top three player. Are you keeping him or are you moving him somewhere else? I don't think there's any doubt. Dare I say 9 out of 10, and that 10th might be Bill O'Brien, but 9 out of 10 GMs are going to say, yeah, I'm keeping him because it's really important, and it's one position I have to worry a whole lot less about if I have that guy, not plural, that guy, instead of a whole bunch of guys that have done it at one point in their career, but for more than one reason have not done it recently, and yet I'm going to stockpile those guys and think I'm going to be better off than having that top three guy. It makes no sense.
No. They're trying to play the money game, but it's just you're playing the money game the wrong way. And if they went out and got a guy that you're not going to be able to go out and replace DeAndre Hopkins. That's just not going to happen. But even if you just be smart about it and not overpay for Cooks, I wouldn't mind that you – I mean, if they could have done worse than bringing in a guy like Brandon Cooks. But the problem with this isn't Brandon Cooks. It's how much they paid for him. That's the bigger issue to me. Because if Brandon Cooks plays like he did for 4 or 5 years there, up till 2018, he was one of the top receivers in football. Now, granted, he got traded a lot, so I don't know – I've heard rumblings that he's not a great locker room guy, but Sarah Barshop said that that's not the case.
Yeah, Sarah Barshop says that he's that people love him, so we'll see.
But again, he's been traded a lot. He's got the concussion issue. So I just it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me, and it's like he's very myopic. He's saying he's doing this for the long term success of the franchise, but all of these moves are very, very much in a silo and very much short sighted.
Yeah, I mean, if Hopkins was a guy that was on the decline, then, or if he was an Antonio Brown attitude,
yep.
Then, but come on, man. I mean, stats he put up.
Joel, D-Hop never won a practice, bro. You can't win championships not winning practice. You got to win practice championships before you win real championships, Joel.
Damn those people not understanding the importance of practice. All right, half hour into the show. Plenty more to get to. Love to have you be a part of it as suspect. 713-780-3776. Your XFL came and went, and before you even got to know them any better, they may never be again. We have news for you on the XFL and your Roughnecks, as well as lots more as we get the second half hour of the show going. The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Loose lips, sink ships, Cameron, pink drip, that is my fashion. I'm not really with the high
flashing. It's no helping with my bragging. This is ESPN 97.5.
Stretch my hands to you. Life like, this is what your life like. Try to live your life right. People really know you.
You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sciarra.
Second half of The Usual Suspects right now on ESPN 97.5. We'll switch gears a little bit, and we can always return for more of the Texans talk, but in some very, very disappointing news for a season that uplifted a city here in Houston, Texas, the XFL has suspended operations, laid off all of their employees, and according to ESPN, has no plans for a 2021 season. XFL CEO Jeffrey Pollock held a 10-minute conference call to inform all employees of the news. He did not take questions. And he left a lot of things kind of up in the air, but basically it sounds like, from what ESPN is saying, that this could be the end of what seemed like it was one of the better chances for a league to survive, being put together to play football up against the NFL and everything else, based on the start they had, the attendance they had, the TV deals they had. This seemed like it checked all the boxes, and yet they're basically saying, aside from what they didn't say, they did say this was a coronavirus 19 issue that led them to make these decisions, which is very sad.
Yeah, my heart breaks for everyone involved with the XFL, because I was a doubter, I was skeptical, I was a pessimist, I was all those things that I think a lot of people were. There were some people that were, you know, thought that maybe it had a chance, but I think most people realistically thought, it's going to be difficult. But you know what? They didn't listen to the haters like me and you. They came forward and I didn't know how I threw you in there. They came forward,
yeah.
and they put a good product on the field, the best product they could, and they made it fun. And they didn't try to be the NFL. They didn't try to be wrestling. They found a lane early on, and I think they did a wonderful job. I think it was really cool to see the fan support for this team, even locally, much less around the country. Fans got, you know, behind this league, and it was cool to see players from the league now getting a shot in the NFL.
Yes.
So I think it tells you that yep. There was some talent, there were some eyes, people were watching the NFL. You mentioned the other day is starting to adopt some things that the XFL was doing. This had the makings of something that was going to be around for a little while. It wasn't gimmicky. It was new and innovative, because there's a big difference, but a fine line between being gimmicky and innovative. And I think that last time they were gimmicky and this time they were innovative. And I'm sad and my heart breaks for everybody involved.
I was very disappointed too. I know a lot of the people here locally, but the thing that I noticed more than anything else about sport, because I'm with you, I was skeptical from a football product standpoint. I just thought it would be too watered down. It would be a lot of hype to try and get people brainwashed into believing it was quality football on the level of NFL-type football. And yet it would be a lesser product that would be hard to watch. Instead, what I found out was how much the city of Houston in particular, and even the state of Texas, but overall every city that had a team, loves football. And if you get a grassroots football league in which everybody's objective is to just enjoy the game at its purest form and try and do things to the right way, to where you're not jamming it down their throat or trying to steal money from people, and do it, you know, and then for the Houston team to start out 5-0, it was like, this shows you how much this community lives and dies and breathes and enjoys football, because boy, did they get behind the team. They love the games. They love the people involved. They obviously love the results. And the numbers were there for a team, for a city that we all hammer on for being a bit fair weather in a lot of cases. Once they got on board with this team and realized how much fun it was, and then they started winning, it was so awesome to see at a time when everything else was just basically the plugs were being pulled and everything was kind of falling apart in front of your face with the Astros and the cheating scandal and the Rockets, you know, up and downs, and everything that is happening with the Texans. It was like, God, this is great. And then
yeah.
I'm like you. I read the news today, and I said to Lisa, I was like, oh, man. I mean, this sucks.
Yeah, they found out on a conference call that took all of 10 minutes, and it was just like, hey, we can't make it, and, you know, I don't know what to do now. But, yeah, it sucks for everybody involved, the players, the front office, the league officials, everybody involved, because now everybody's out, and they didn't even get a full season to prove what they could do and show what they could do as an organization. So it sucks, man.
Dell, did Granado say rough news today from the XFL?
No, because it came after the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? And a lot of good people. I understand, like, Oliver Luck, you know, left a very good position to take this role on and saw this as a long-term commitment that he's not. But I care more about, you know, the grassroots people on the front lines of every one of these teams. Brian Michael Cooper, who paid his dues and worked in the G League and worked at Rice University and then all of a sudden got this opportunity to run the entire franchise and was doing a good job. You know, Jay Lucas, longtime Astros PR guy, who wanted another chance to get into professional sports and got it and really just loved being a part of sports again, and you could feel his passion involved in it. Several people I worked with teams in this city, got a chance to work in another front office, and they just felt it was so upliftingly positive that it's a shame that by no fault of their own that they're not no longer going to have a job, and that we're not going to have an XFL anymore, at least so it looks, because literally without the coronavirus, you know, I dare I say it, but I believe this league had longevity. I believe that this league would, I think Nate Griffin tweeted it out, they'd be on their way to Seattle right now to play a game this weekend. And by the end of the season, per se, you would probably be talking about what changes to be made to have even more success in year two. And like you said, players that were making the jump to the NFL. So the success story continues from that, from a personnel and quality of play standpoint. Even if you're labeled the G League of the NFL, so what? You're never going to overtake the NFL. But the fact that you have a niche in which you have success and financial stability is all you really need. And I think they were well on their way to doing it.
Yeah. It sucks, man. It really does. I was rooting for them. They converted me and I was excited for the city and the league. So it sucks, man. It sucks.
And we know a lot. I mean, even we know a lot of people involved in it too, from Tyler and Granado and Nate and Raheel. Yeah. All these different people that had a, you know, small role with what was a big success, you know that it was a tough pill to swallow, because what, you know, for the most part, even with those guys, it wasn't about the secondary income. It was more about the fact that, hey, this is fun. Mm-hmm. And so that's what sucks too. So, you know, hopefully there's some way to salvage, but it doesn't look good based on the NFL, the ESPN headline, which the XFL didn't want to address, but essentially there's no plans for 2021. So it does look indeed like that would be a short-lived league, but Oh, well, now we've got more Texans to talk about, I guess.
Yay.
Yeah, not so positive there. So a lot of people, of course, chiming in all over the place on this Bill O'Brien thing. Boy, the thing is this morning, normally, you know, we get up. First Take, you normally get like Max taking one side, Stephen A. taking the other. This morning, all three of those guys just took their time slot to completely bash Bill O'Brien. And whether you gave him any credit as a head coach or not, the consensus was he has to go. And that's the thing that's most disappointing to me. I know Cal wants to make money, but at some point he has to look at how this is affecting the bottom line. If, you know, your reputation is basically you, James Dolan, and a handful of select other franchises have the worst people in place in the league to make game decisions, you know, from the team perspective, and yet you're not doing anything to improve the fact that fans are jumping off the bandwagon and want no part of the product that you're putting out there. But I don't think anybody's going to wake up Cal McNair and tell him, hey, it's time to see what's going on right in front of your eyes.
Well, I think the one thing you have to consider is, and I hear the music, so I'll keep it short.
Yep.
But I think the one thing you have to consider is that we do have to see how this plays out. So he's made all of his moves. He's going to have a draft under his belt. Let's see what happens next season. If this team misses the playoffs, if they take a significant step back, if they go from 10-6 to 6-10, then I think Cal McNair has to come out and answer it. But it's not going to happen right now, so people can stop thinking about that. These moves have to be – they all have to be displayed on the field, and we have to see what happens.
Okay, glass half full. We got that to look forward to, which is nice, and hopefully it pans out for them. We'll see how that plays out, as you said. So we've got plenty more to get to. It's only the first hour of the show. We've got two more clips coming up from our comedian of the week, Eddie B., and lots more, including interaction with you guys. So let us know how you're feeling, what you're thinking, and we'll continue to roll. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sharara.
Back on The Usual Suspects. We roll through hour number one of the three-hour show. It's Barry, Dell, and myself. And the hits just keep on coming because, fellas, we have all of that unfortunate news to talk about early in the show. Now this, according to ESPN, the NFL Competition Committee does not endorse pass interference reviews going forward. Good. We already talked about that. That's great. However, they also do not endorse the sky judge or having the actual replay official in the stadium working as a member of the officials team that travels weekend to weekend, and that won't be in place either. So essentially we're just left to league office decisions based on the headquarters in New York and the same old stuff that we had before the Saints Rams game.
Yeah, because why would we want to get it right? Why would we want to have someone there watching the game? Why would we want it all to occur within the flow? There's a lot more. It's easier to be secretive if we just throw it back to New York and everyone waits, and league officials can buy in or can fan the flames of conspiracy theories and everything else. So yeah, it would make sense to have somebody there. So of course, why would a professional sports league do that?
Well, and the thing is, just like you talked about, the NFL. I had brought it up on several occasions. I was pleased that instead of being holier than thou, the NFL was open to looking at the XFL and some of the adjustments they made to the rules that seem to be positives, i.e. the kickoffs and the sky judge and some of the different things that they implemented to make the game more entertaining, faster paced, all those different things. Now it almost seems in reading this article like because it wasn't a league-wide idea that what they did was with the competition committee is teams were allowed to submit suggestions. And because I think it was the Eagles, Dell, your Dolphins had suggested a couple of different tweaks on certain things. The Eagles suggested some things. Basically, they said owners usually follow the competition committee's recommendations and rarely approve proposals submitted by individual teams. I mean, again...
Well, then what's the point?
Yeah. The point is to get the calls right, as you said, not to worry about which team looks smarter than the other or gets credit for doing so. So the owners are to meet, by the way, May 19th and 20th in Marina Del Rey. They will be the ones that make the final call on both of these issues. But it just sounds like it's a formality.
Yeah, it's almost like a put out a suggestion box, and then at the end of the day, just throw all this stuff away. But at least we put the suggestion box out. That's literally what the NFL is doing.
Yeah.
Hey, tell us all your ideas, but we're not going to do any of it, stupid. But you can give them to us because it's going to make you feel better and you'll shut up. So, cool. Just
well, on a good
that's
note,
what they're doing.
The committee did approve two proposals, a rule that would prevent teams from manipulating the game clock by committing multiple penalties while the clock is running to stop the clock. Patriots and Titans were amongst the teams that used the tactic, shockingly enough, Bill Belichick. But that was approved so that teams can't do that anymore. And then they're expanding defenseless player protection on kickoffs and punts.
Well, how do you go back? How do you enforce that first one though?
A rule so you can't continue to call timeouts to stop the clock. I don't know if they haven't. I think you're penalized either by timeout, loss of timeouts, or penalty like a delay of game, and again then the clock wouldn't stop. I think the other thing that they would just simply say after the first violation and dead ball foul, that's it. Even if you get another penalty, it's not going to stop the clock.
No, I think if you remember what's his name, Mike Vrabel did to Bill Belichick himself is that right before the 5 minute mark in that playoff game, he took multiple penalties on punts on punt formations but the clock would run because it was ahead of 5 minutes. So I think the only thing you could do is actually stop the clock as opposed to allowing it to run because he took a delay a game, and then you can't do more than one delay a game in a row. So then he took a false start to get it to 5 minutes. So he ran like a minute plus off the clock. I think now they're actually going to just stop the clock if you do
that. Because I was
going
to say, because it has to be enforceable. But what if there is multiple fouls? I mean, what if there is multiple legitimate fouls?
Well,
I guess the clock doesn't run.
Yeah, after the first one, that's where they're going to make the adjustment and say, okay, one we'll go with legit, but then after that, even if it is legit, we can't allow you to manipulate the system, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay.
So they approved that. They approved expanding defenseless player protection on kickoffs and punt returns. If they have possession but haven't had time to ward off an impeding contact. So they'll protect the receiving, the kick and punt receivers, but they won't get into all of this other stuff. Although they still could approve it, it doesn't look like that they will. It says that many coaches preferred a version of the Sky Judge, whether it be from the Alliance of American Football or the XFL. The Ravens and the Chargers proposed two ideas. One, booth umpire would serve as an eighth member of that officiating crew with the ability to communicate to the rest of the crew. The other is a senior technology assistant to the referee. The star, as it's referred to, would have access to video equipment and the authority to consult with officials in limited situations. Both positives, both, as we said, would be working towards the ultimate goal of making sure you got the play called right, regardless of which way it went. And now they're both going by the wayside, it seems.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I see why they would want to get rid of, I guess, are they going to call it the Vrabel rule? Because I can see why they would want to get rid of those tactics. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was funny. And it was being used against Bill Belichick. and he was losing his mind. So I was good with that. I'm good to see the whole defenseless receiver, defenseless returner thing. That obviously, anytime you can protect players, it's good. I think the Sky Judge is dumb to pass on. I think they should have done it. I just find it comical that Vrabel pretty much got under the skin of his former coach, and he's caused the entire league to have to change rules because he was smarter than everybody else.
Yeah, I love it too. Anytime you can use it against Bill Belichick, I'm totally for it.
And good thing the Texans let him go and kept Bill O'Brien as their head coach. So that's cool.
Yeah. So, but yeah, let's be honest. I don't think a lot of people had a lot of positives for the future of Mike Vrabel as a head coach when he left. I think everybody had a lot of basically had the idea that he had a lot to learn and they weren't sold on him. He proved a lot of people wrong in a short period of time, obviously, with what he did in Tennessee.
Yeah, he did. And, I mean, his players would run through a damn wall for him now. And that just shows you the kind of guy he was and is. One that got away.
Yeah, if it can last over the length of time, you know, as time goes by, more power to him. Obviously, from short-term perspective, it's like McHale when he came in to finish the season with Minnesota and had a run. And then what he did early with the Rockets. When you have someone that's played the game and played it at a high level, like Vrabel, like McHale, players buy in. And then after a certain amount of time, the luster wears off, and you have to get down to brass tacks with actually coaching the game, winning games, and getting the players based on their treatment to stay with you. And in the case of McHale, it didn't work out. You hope for Vrabel that he continues the success. Unless you're a Texans fan, then you want him to fall flat on his face. So. All right, that'll about do it for hour number one of the show, but we still got 2 hours to go, so we have a lot more to get to and a lot more that you can be involved in. When you look at what we have going on during the course of the day, fellas, in my own home state with my own dearly loved home team, University of Wisconsin has really ticked me off with a decision that they made that we can get into at some point because I think it really screws the college athlete, so we can talk about that. Lots of other things, including Tom Brady's choices for new trademarking for his new team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Barry, you're going to have a field day with these if you haven't seen them already.
And
lots more to get to. So if you want to join us, 713-780-3776. That is the HR&P listener line. Call that number, text that number, and also you can hit us on Twitter as we take you into hour number two. Coming up next, right here on The Usual Suspects, it is ESPN 97.5. Before we go to the break, I do want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. If you need any kind of roofing repairs or a new roof on your house, there's only one place to go, and it's Fitz Roofing. Simply put, they are locally owned and operated, and their sole goal is to make sure they take care of you before, during, and after the sale. They're not going to be like deposit thieves, sketchy roofers, storm chasers, get your money up front, then they skip town before they do anywhere near good work. These people are here for you because they live here and they're dedicated to you. They have the best ratings in the business, A-plus rating on the Better Business Bureau, 5-star ratings on Facebook and Home Advisor. And if you call them at 832-521-3001, you can get a free no-obligation inspection today. They come to you, tell you what they can do. And now, because of the fact that it's slow, people are really concerned with the coronavirus, they have a lot of time on their hands. If it's a quick fix or something that they can repair, relatively minor work, they may even do it for free. They said they're out there for you right now, so check them out right now better than ever before. That you can always get a free no-obligation inspection. They may actually do the work for you free of charge because they're looking to keep their people busy while they get through this pandemic. It's just another way Fitz is giving back to you. You can also check them out online, FITZRoofing.com, but like I said, call them. 832-521-3001. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5.